Hi, Howard Marks here. My favorite VMworld sessions are the ones where I can heckle Pedro Arrow and John Nicholson.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Arrow and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 49. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me as always is my friend and soon to be scuba dive certified, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Good, good. A little tired, but chalking it up.
Oh, yeah? How's the scuba life going?
It's kind of serene down there. Although it's funny because you do all the training and it's all for all the worst case stuff. So you're sitting there, 15 feet down. They're like, "Hey, I want you to take your mask off." I'm like, "No, this is a perfectly good mask. Like, why do you want me to take that off?"
Yeah, you told me once before that you did some snorkeling, but you prefer to do a deep dive usually with scuba gear.
Are
you?
I get it.
Are you sensing my transition?
Yeah. Like, I think I'm actually more content in the class when I'm just sitting on the bottom of the pool rather than trying to do all kinds of stupid things at 3 feet of depth. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I like snorkeling. I think it's a really fun thing, and I think everybody should try to snorkel. I think it's great. Going deep down is certainly not for everybody, but for those of you that do like to do a deep dive, corny transition, we've got the show for you today. We're bringing on the authors of the Host Resources Deep Dive, Mr. Frank Dennerman and Niels. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, guys.
Have you started reading the book, John?
Yeah, I've started. You know, it's funny because you would think my first section would be going straight to storage, but I was looking through the table of contents and I'm like, oh, networking. And I was like, I want to see their, commentary on load balance and some other things. So it really covers everything.
Yeah, I definitely want to walk through this with the guys. I'm very curious about the process of actually putting a book together and making this happen. So definitely want to hear that from you guys as well. But before we do, VMworld is upon us. And just a couple of days ago, they announced who is going to be singing, who the talent is going to be this year at VMworld. Did you hear that?
Yeah, so yeah. It's not Insane Clown Posse, right?
No. No, no.
Blink.
Yes, that is right. Blink 182. Very, very good. I'm really glad about that, honestly, because I'm not going to say all the bands have been mediocre at VMworld, but I think this is going to be one of the highlighted bands. I'm pretty excited about Blink 182. How about you?
See, I'm feeling old because it's actually a band I listen to in my youth now. As
I hear that.
So what was the greatest band that you saw at VMworld? What was the best performance? I have mine, but I want to hear yours.
I forget the name of that band. What's that rock band that played a couple of years ago?
The Killers?
The Killers in Vegas, and I believe it was 2011 or 2010. I'm not sure. That thing, that whole party was brilliant.
Yeah.
Really, really brilliant.
Killers was good. Yeah. But my favorite musical performance has to be when Frank and Niels were just rapping gangster rap, walking through the streets of Barcelona. But not everybody got to see that, so.
The stories.
Hey, I jumped ahead of myself. Before we dive into the book, I think everybody on the call already knows Frank Dennerman. He's been working at VMware for a while now. He's been focusing on VMware Cloud on AWS. But Niels, not everybody knows you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're doing?
So yeah, I'm Niels Haghoort, which is a pretty difficult name to pronounce in English, I guess. And I'm a freelance virtualization architect. So jumping around at customer sites and actually doing some pretty cool vSAN implementations nowadays. So that's the Niels behind only writing the book.
Very nice. First time I met you, you were at VMworld presenting with Frank, and I sat in the audience like, wow, this is amazing. You guys were doing a resources deep dive similar to what this book is, but that was my first introduction to the both of you presenting. I'll be checking that session out again this year.
Cool. And then that's actually a funny thing, because when Frank and I began writing the book, we had this idea to create a different mindset for consultants and architects and everybody involved in the virtualization community, right? So what we actually did starting the book is we found a couple of peers, friends in the Netherlands, and actually checked if our ideas were feasible and good enough to actually write a book about. And the VMworld session was kind of an extent of that, right? It was about getting the feedback and getting to know the fact if people found it interesting enough. So it was a lot of fun, the VMworld session. It was some good attendance, some good questions, and a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah. That actually brings me to my first question for you guys. What was the motivating factor for writing this book? Frank, I know you've already written, a few books. I know you wrote one with Duncan for sure, but what made you think that the world needed a book on host resources deep dive?
Well, so Niels, I was doing a really cool project at a telecom provider, and he was hitting some problems with CPUs. And together with his team, together with teammates, he started to dive in, and we had some contact about it because I was writing the NUMA deep dive, and it sparked our interest, and it really allowed us to actually dive deeper and deeper and deeper. And the moment you start to write something about it and you start to tweet about it, you see like 50, 60 retweets coming on a particular statement, right? I'm like, holy, this is just a statement that I'm making, and everybody's jumping into this.
Right,
same
right.
thing with the NUMA deep dive. I wrote the NUMA deep dive, and it was on the front page of Hacker News. I'm like, I'm writing something for a virtualization space. It's a giant market, but it's just one of the elements within the whole computer industry, right? And everybody is going nuts about the actually traditional stuff that we ought to know, right? What everybody needs to know. And that allowed us to think about it in such a way that, hey, if you look closely, the hypervisor and the hardware beneath it is creating the fundament for the next level platforms that we're looking at right now, such as NSX and right. such as vSAN, right?
Oh, yeah.
You guys know this, right? Especially with particular storage controllers and with certain firmwares and certain BIOSes. Look, in the last 8 years, if you take away the last three, we didn't look at storage controllers in servers at all, right? That was just something, you just ordered a server and you thought, I want to have this many memory, I want to have this many cores, and that was about it.
Right,
but
right.
When vSAN came along, it was, holy shit, what type of storage controller do I have in my system? Some actually didn't even have a storage controller. So that brought us back to the original stuff that we used to look at in the late 90s, the early 2000s, right? So that for us was interesting, that we actually started to figure out, hey, if you got your fundament right, it's the same thing as building a building. You don't build a skyscraper on paper stuff, right? You need to have concrete, you need to have a solid foundation. And the moment you have that solid foundation, the rest is kind of easy, right? Or it allows you to create a consistent performing environment, right? In our case, a consistent performing a networking platform or a storage platform, or actually even both. Right? And that is the key. Every single thing will finally hit a CPU, will finally use memory, will finally use CPU cache, right? So you cannot ignore one thing and want to build the best thing with just some components. Everything ties together. Everything is one giant thing, actually.
That's absolutely right. That's brilliant.
Well, that was something I remember in the early days of troubleshooting performance problems on vSphere, was looking at, it was interesting seeing the symbiotic relationship to where if storage latency got high, that would actually drive CPU higher as CPU was waiting on storage IO for execution. And inversely, if CPU got too high, then there wasn't enough CPU to process storage sitting in an IO queue on a fiber channel HBA or things like that. So understanding this machine, you know, literally, and all the different places, you're right. It's critical you understand the relationships and all the different little places within those different IO and processing steps.
Exactly. And the same goes for networking, right? So it's all down to the CPU time and the CPU cycles that are consumed by the VM kernel. It's all down to CPU.
Yeah, that's the thing I like about it too. And great job on even the design of the book. But you look on the very back of the book and it's got CPU, memory, storage, network. Four little icons there just to show you exactly what this book is about. So it's essentially four big chunks of information on CPU, memory, storage, and network. So tell us a little bit about the setup. I really do like the fact that there are so many forwards in this book. You've got one forward by Kit Colbert, which I thought was brilliant. And then also there's like a preface for each section with different SMEs. I don't think I've ever seen that done before. What made you think of that?
So we had a discussion about when we discussed who's going to do the forward. And that was quite easy, right? The CTO of the cloud business unit at VMware, which is Kit. Kit did a lot of amazing work as an engineer. And he led the cloud native BU, and he's now the cloud business unit CTO. But the reality is there's so many people that we know that made a difference in the industry. For example, Pat Gelsinger, he is the father of the 486 architecture, right? So he is just an email away. So Niels and I talked about it, and I'm like, what do you think if we start to reach out to some of the industry legends, right? And he said, oh, awesome, let's try to do it. And I'm like, okay. So I had some ideas about who to contact. I was talking to Duncan, and I'm like, okay, I've got the perfect guy for network for storage, which is Christos. I've got the perfect guy for yep. for memory, which is Carl Walzberger, who actually invented DRS and all the resource management. I'm like, but I'm not sure about the CPU. And I'm like, I talked to Christianos, which is the lead architect of the Xeon microarchitecture line, but I'm not sure. He said, look, it's really easy. Pat Gelsinger, right? I'm like, yeah, but dude, do you think he has time to write such a forward? And he's like, well, try. So I emailed Pat. I'm like, Pat, this is what we're doing. Would you like to provide us with a prologue for the CPU section? Within 3 minutes, and I kid you not, 3 minutes, I got a reply. Awesome idea. How? When do you want it? How long does it need to be? Like, okay. Wow. Within 2 days, he actually wrote it. And maybe you read it already. It is actually brilliant stuff. And Niels made the awesome remark. He said, if you read through his words, you can actually see his eyes light up. He is psyched up. He is very energetic in his words. So you know he enjoys talking to CPUs again. So to every viewer, whenever you meet Pat, just talk about CPU. I think he will like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, this was cool. And all the other guys like Andrew Lambeth, who designed the network stack, who actually invented the distributed switch, a distributed vSwitch. We reached out to him. He said, awesome idea. And he gave us an awesome prologue. I think every prologue is brilliant in its own.
Yep. And that was the great thing to see, right? Everybody was so enthusiastic and willing to cooperate. It was really a good idea, and how it came out, just perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I must say, like, when I first got the book, I saw how big it was, and I was like, wow, this is a lot of information. And I was like, I'm definitely going to read through it. I'm interested. I know a lot of the folks that contributed, and, you know, it was, you know, but I'll tell you what, I'm pounding through the processor section, the CPU architecture, and I am learning a lot. I mean, there's a lot of great information in this book. And so I have to say that if I was going to give a recommendation, it would definitely be, no matter who you are, if you're in the IT industry, this book needs to be on your shelf, because there's so much information on here. And there's just historical information about technology. There's current information. I mean, stuff I couldn't even imagine finding, and it's all in here so far. So I'm really enjoying the book so far.
Thanks. That's an awesome recommendation. So
yeah, thanks. I mean, just to stress for that, I mean, people who are in operations, they, you know, when they run into issues, they're going to want to have this knowledge. People who are the architects, they really need to have this knowledge to make sure they're putting a proper design forward. It's just, there's so many different groups of people within our industry who should be wanting this knowledge.
Yeah, so that was basically the fundament of the Clustering Deep Dive book that we wrote. So I was, back in the day, I was doing a project with Duncan in London at that time. And we were talking about how many tech books you actually had on your bookshelf back in the day, right? When we both did NT MCSE, and we talked about it, and we came to the same conclusion that these books are just a collection of screenshots that tell you where to click, right? But they don't tell you, if I click here, what actually happens over there, right? And that was for us the idea to actually start writing a book that shows what's happening under the cover. And that's one of the biggest challenges to do. It's not like finding out what's under the cover, because first of all, you have your own lab, so you can start to simulate it, and you can start to re-engineer it. But the reality is, the biggest challenge of writing such a book is, how deep do you want it to go? So the book, at one point, we had like 700 pages, but we thought, this is way too much, right? And we cut out some really good stuff, but it was just too deep. Because at one point you have to figure out, when is content not information anymore that you can apply? When it's just basically rambling, right? So like what I'm doing right now. what I mean to say is that you have information on how things work, and you have additional information that allows it allows you to understand why it works like that, right? But then you go with the, in the rabbit hole, you go deeper and deeper, and then at one point you're like, how did I get stuck here, right?
Right,
so
right, right.
There is this fine art of feeling like, okay, if I tell this is enough information to understand the behavior of these elements, right? And that takes a lot of time to actually figure out.
Oh, I would imagine there's an art to you know, because you're telling a story. I mean, I know this is not just a complete brain dump on every single thing you know about all of these different areas within the server architecture. You want to make it apply to everybody. I mean, but yeah, it's still very deep. I mean, there's an entire section, there's an entire chapter dedicated to memory subsystem bandwidth. So it definitely goes deep enough. But I think you did it. I think you found the right balance.
When I was looking through the storage section, and I love the areas you focused on, particularly as storage is going through a transition right now. There's lots of things you could have talked about within existing SCSI, SATA type subsystems, gone on about native command queuing versus tag command queuing. But is that relevant, towards this? And is that where things are going? I like that you spent more time focusing on kind of the next generation NVMe IO path, because that's the stuff that's really going to be relevant, not just today, but much more strongly so in the next 6 months as we kind of leave a lot of these legacy concepts behind.
Well, I think Niels has something to add about this as well. But one of the things I started to study computer science, and in your first year, you always get these history lessons about really old stuff that you're like, I cannot apply this to real life anymore. So tell me, how does it help me? Right. So that was something we wanted to avoid. Yeah, we go in and we do some history lessons, but it also allows you to understand why we're still doing certain stuff like that. For example, the NUMA versus SUMA debate, right?
Well, yep.
You have to understand that, hey, if I disable NUMA, will I have a uniform memory access? No, because, and then I explained that we moved away from a front size bus into a distributed memory model. So even though you disable something on the software, you're not transforming. It is not becoming Optimus Prime in your data center, basically, to a different system. It is still the same physical layout, but you basically lobotomize certain things. Right. And that was the reason why we were introduced some of the history lessons. Same thing with networking.
See, I just want to know what the turbo button did on my computer. That's the one thing I never understood. So no, I like the avoiding there are cases where the history of why we are where we are, or why that's, yes, that option's there, but that's a legacy construct. But you're right, it's gotta be part of practical consumable information. So
what was it like putting together the book? Are there any thoughts around, like, let's just say I'm interested in writing a book, what tips would you have for me, the person who just has the information in the head and is trying to actually get it onto paper? How was that process for you?
Yeah, well, first of all, you should clear your schedule for about a year. Yeah, well, but time management, right? It's probably the most difficult challenge. We both have a very busy day job, and it was all about getting the day job done, getting back home, putting the kids to sleep, and just go forward with writing the content and testing and discussing and all that is required to actually create the content. And that was the most difficult thing for me.
Yeah, so one thing that we did, we started out with actually putting some boundaries. Like, what are we going to actually discuss? What is our target audience? And what is the stuff that we want to convey? And of course, you along the way, you find cool new stuff that you really want to get into the book. Like the VSI shell command is just pure digital heroin. It is seriously, when you got into that thing, you actually can see, it's like Neo. No, you're not like Neo. You're like the operator in Matrix. You see the Matrix, right? You see how ESXi works.
Right.
If you want to do it, that's something you decide yourself. But the reality is, you need to create a scope. Such a similar to a normal project, you need to find your scope barriers. But then you have to figure out really what looks like trivial stuff, but it isn't trivial. Like, what type of voice are we going to write in? Are we going to use you? Are we going to say I? Are we going to be more distant and explain it like we're the authority and you need to just listen? Or do you want to engage with the audience in the book, right? So that's a really interesting thing because that allows you to write in a particular style and you're not always reading the other guy's stuff, right? So that has to be done up in front. And then you need to share data and you need to work together on creating content. And one thing that I did was I have a lab in my home and I shared it with Niels. So I was doing a lab as a service type of thing. So beyond me writing stuff and doing my daytime job, I was also being an administrator to the lab because that thing broke like 600,000 times in because we're pushing the boundaries every single time, right? So, right. But it helps because once you have one source of truth, and that is one particular hardware, one particular type of software, you can focus on certain things together. I think that helps a lot, right? Other than that, yeah, just share a lot and talk a lot with each other. So I think for the last 3 months, I basically saw 1 o'clock in the night, 2 o'clock in the night, sometimes 3 o'clock in the night, sometimes 4 o'clock in the night. And basically I picked Niels, I'm going off to bed at 4 o'clock in the night. And he basically responds within a minute. Now that sounds like a good idea, right? So seriously, you need to understand that when you write a book, you have to make sacrifices. It's not how, like I said, with everything, it's not like how much do you want it? It's like, what do I want to give up? For this. And when writing a book, you have to give up a lot of social stuff.
Yep, totally agree. And one of the other parts that really helped were the other guys, right, who were contributing with the book, our reviewers. So that was also a massive time management thing to get the reviews done in time and allows you to move ahead to the next chapter. And not being fully focused on the next chapter and having to jump back at a previous chapter because a reviewer just finished that chapter, right? So that was it's a lot of context switching, a lot.
Yeah, I've been a technical reviewer, editor, whatever the term is for a book, and it's interesting. You know, you go through and you ask all these questions like why is this, and yeah, I'm sure it's great being sucked back to some concept that you've put out of your head for 30 days and you've already moved on, particularly on something that's got multiple facets like this book. That's got to be distracting.
Yeah exactly. It's insane, the context switching, what you do, because you're not writing chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, you're writing chapter 4, chapter 7, chapter 15, and you go back to 1, right? That's how it goes. And then basically when you're in chapter 15 and somebody asks you stuff about chapter 7, which is memory, for example, or bowel management, yeah, hold on. I need to get back to that world, right? So, yeah, it's cool. It's a cool exercise.
Yeah, I mean, I work in technical marketing, as does John. And, so we're no stranger to the writing process, to the review process. And I've certainly been in situations, and sometimes the worst part is when it goes up for SME review, for the subject matter experts to come and pick it apart. There's a lot of technical corrections, which are always, always welcome because you don't want to put out something that is inaccurate. But then there's just the different opinions about, I would say this or I would say that. And I've written like maybe 50 page documents, 70 page, probably the most. But I can't imagine a 700 page book and trying to get that much feedback from all the different places. That must have been exhausting.
Yeah. In short, yeah, it was. But as we said before, it is also so rewarding to get other people enthusiastic about the content, right? And so it kind of was just a blast to do.
So one thing that really is cool to see is everybody on Twitter posting pictures of their copy of the book. That's always cool to see.
Yeah, I posted a picture of mine sitting in my living room as soon as I cracked it open. And so I was definitely excited about doing that. But I saw that you had some sort of call to post pictures of it in different locations or something like that. I saw somebody posted one in front of like the London Bridge or something.
I'm thinking exotic locations was where it's going, right?
So what do you have in mind, John? Because I haven't seen your picture yet.
On Sunday, I leave for some exotic places. So
Okay.
I'll be in Bali, in Manila, in Thailand, in Cambodia, in a couple of places. So I'll try to get some interesting. I'll try to get that photo where the monkey's stealing it and I'm chasing him. You know, something like that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, well, I can send you another one if you post one picture like 100 feet down in your scuba gear and you're reading it out at the bottom of the ocean. That would be a cool picture.
Nice. Might have to use Photoshop for that one, but. Well, like they do in a lot of other, like Oprah, like she has like her book club and all that stuff. And so I thought it would be appropriate to read a small excerpt from your book. So if you would turn to page 384 and you'll see a small excerpt that I'm going to read. And it says, this is some really good information that they share with us here. It says, visit storagehub.vmware.com. It's full of lots of technical documentation, and it provides access to the always excellent Virtually Speaking podcast. The end.
I see what you did there.
Thanks for the shout out.
Yeah, you guys rock. It's always a pleasure to listen to you guys. And you should have actually had more coverage in the book, I believe.
Well, I'll just get in line for the next one. I saw a lot of great names there on the reviewers. One of our coworkers, Pete Keeler's on there, Duncan, Cormac, all the good ones. So, this book has been through a lot of good hands. The forwards, I mean, you've got all the experts. I mean, people that literally invented most of this technology that we use have had at least some part in this book. So this is a well-qualified book, in my opinion.
Thanks.
So are you guys, I know you guys are doing a session at VMworld. Is it going to, and is the title of the session Host Resources Deep Dive?
Yeah, so it's actually part two, right, of the same session we did last year. And what we are doing right now, actually, we just visited some VMUX, and we already included some of the content we will present at the VMworld in it. So just to find out again if it's if it's an interesting story, right? So, but yeah, we are going to both VMworlds and doing a part deux, as you will, on the deep dive session.
Awesome. Well, for sure, if you haven't already got the book, please go to Amazon.com and order the book. Obviously, that's the first thing you should be doing today. As soon as you hear this, if you don't have it, go ahead and order it. And if you're in IT, buy a few copies and give them to some of your subordinates, for sure. And if that doesn't work, head to VMworld because I'm sure they're going to be passing these out around at VMworld. I know Duncan already told me that he's going to be handing some out in his session because he's got a few. I think, John, we should probably have a couple on hand as well for our sessions, maybe as a giveaway. We're going to be at the HCI Zone. The podcast is going to be broadcasting inside the Solutions Exchange. So we should have you guys come on while we're there as well. Maybe do a little bit of recap of your session, and we'll have some books there as well. So if you're going to VMworld and you don't have a copy, there's probably a good chance you might get one by attending one of the related sessions. And so always options. But don't wait that long. Go to Amazon and get it now because it's definitely worth it. This is worth your money. I promise you that. John, anything else before we let these young men take off?
Young men. I got nothing, Pete.
You're ready to go. You're ready to go scuba diving, aren't you?
Oh, I'm ready to go take a nap. But yeah.
Frank, Niels, thank you so much for coming on, and we will definitely see you at VMworld.
I got one question for you guys. So this is episode 49, right? So what are you guys going to do for episode 50?
Actually, great question. We are doing a vSAN off-road discussion. We're going to be bringing on one of the SEs, James Lefort. Yes, James Lefort. And he's going to be talking about, you know, not every vSAN deployment has to be according to best practices or recommended, right? There are different solutions. There are different reasons why you may want to deploy it a different way, right, John?
Yeah, we're going to talk about, well, I mean, it's just kind of, some people look for cookie cutter reference architectures and things like that. And we're going to talk about when you get to kind of some of the different ends or going kind of off-road, so to speak. And what's supported and why you would go for some of those kind of more edge use case deployments.
Absolutely. So that will be our episode 50. And Frank, Niels, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you at VMworld.
Awesome. It was an honor to be on again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Anytime you want to come back, man.
Awesome.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud or iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, as I mentioned, we're going off-road, vSAN off-road. And so until then, bye for now. Oh, that was a deep dive, John.
Oh, yeah.
We have some awesome host deep dive t-shirts for you guys as well.
Extra medium? Large.
Okay.
Medium. Yeah, yeah. European quadruple you're, extra large, probably.
Do you have any spandex? Down. I like extra small if you have it.
Okay.
We will create a spandex one for you, people.
Right. Do you want to expose your belly button, or is that a little bit escape for you guys?
Is that even
it's
a question?
The 90s all over again.
Enough of this jibber jabber.